Alrighty, are we almost ready to get underway?
Da 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 da.
Thank you, Geraldine. Okay, welcome to CCNA 1, Module 7. And before we get started, just some housekeeping things and some administrivia. First of all, I would like to publicly apologise to George, whose question was handled somewhat unprofessionally last week. Anybody who wants to hear what happened can listen to last week's lecture, it's still there. And we hope to deal with questions in a more professional manner in future, and certainly keep any disagreements we may have out of the public lecture theatre and off the recordings. Secondly, the administrivia. The support policies, as far as I'm concerned, are going to change. I'm not going to be available as much on Skype as I once was. Can people please use their email? Often people think that the Skype instant messaging, you just message your instructor and they'll get straight on something. We tend to find it's not rather than instant messaging, it's instant annoyance, especially if we're busy doing something else. We're happy to get on Skype and talk to you, but if you could pre-arrange that with us, that would be good. Otherwise, just because our computer says we're online and sitting in front of the Skype, we're not always working on Cavi. We only work on Cavi 2.5 days a week, plus whatever time we choose to put in. So outside the Wednesday, Thursday morning, Friday time slot, you are dealing with our own personal time. So if we're not available, we apologise. But we do find that we have to make time for other things as well as those sorts of things. So what I would strongly recommend students do is make heavy use of the mailing list. And in fact, and I'm going to mispronounce this, but Anupkov or something, he can shoot me next lecture. He's got his questions answered on Internet Information Server. We have 150, I think, people on that list, and what I'm really pushing towards as CCNA draws to a close and as ITA draws to its close is a far more cohesive working environment where we all work together, including the including all of the students working together to solve each other's problems on the mailing lists. Of course, the instructors are going to be on the mailing lists, and we will be available as a second resort. We're just hoping that we can resolve some more of the technical things internally amongst the group, which will cut the workload down on us, and we'll be a lot happier and should theoretically have some more Skype time and stuff to be able to work on those sorts of things. So we're also considering, and this is just an idea at this stage, and we'd like to hear people's feedback on this, and we will start Module 7 in a moment. We were looking at potentially running Ventrilo tutorial sessions with volunteer lecturers. I know Mr. McMillan has offered to talk on a topic every now and again. I could talk on a couple of topics. Gemma can just talk. No, she could talk on a topic as well. But we were looking at organising to run these lectures for interested people to join in and perhaps find out things about an area of the course that they're struggling with. And those will be recorded, of course, and placed up on the archives if that's something we want. And we're also looking for ideas for Thursday chats because we'd like to bring those back next term. We do have some people from Cisco and some other people willing to talk on the Thursday chats, but we'd also be interested in knowing what you guys would like to know about, and if we can cover it, we'll certainly look at doing that. So give it some thought. I know some of you may not be able to attend the impromptu tutorial sessions, but it may be a way of getting more background information on a topic that you're not likely to get otherwise. All of those questions that we say, no, we're not covering that, well, let's move on. We might be able to cover a few of those in the tutorial sessions, and we'll have various students who are knowledgeable on things running those sessions. Does anybody think that's a good idea?
Hi, Kerry. Yes, I do. And also, I'm also wondering if my audio is working. But yes, I think it's great.
The humorous response here would be, no, I can't hear you at all, but yes, you're coming through loud and clear.
Geraldine could give singing lessons.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so what we want is an idea of when would be a good time to run those tutorial sessions, and you can think about that. I realise it's all going to vary quite a lot because of the time zones. It also means that if we plan to do these extra sessions, we can ensure that we've put the time aside to do them and that we will be available to students to answer their questions, and that could be useful. And it also means that if you guys want to get together and have a powwow about something that is confusing you, you can certainly do that. Keep in mind that the Ventrilo server is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And whilst we realise some of the more dedicated students will want to be on Ventrilo 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can actually use that server outside of class time for study and things if that's something you want to do, or just to have a chat. And in fact, sometimes we jump on overnight just to have a chat about things. That's certainly possible as well. We have a 50-user license. As long as you don't use up all of our 50 slots during lecture times, we won't be unhappy.
Just to give you guys an example, we here last year, CCNA3 students, set together some time because Kerry and Geraldine were driving us nuts with subnetting. And so we lived and breathed on the Ventrilo server and helped each other get through the variety of tough examples that we were given by Kerry, Geraldine, and Ian. And it was just a way for us to help prepare for our finals and midterms for last year.
Is this the point that I say, yes, subnetting will be about 2 or 3 weeks after the school holidays? and you'll... Yes, so that's certainly coming up, and it will be something, if you thought binary and decimal was fun, I don't know whether you'd use the same word to describe subnetting. Once it clicks, everybody's happy, but it is certainly a struggle to get from the initial stages to the actual subnetting of subnetworks. Okay, so what I'm going to do today is I'm going to rip through the module content. Did Corey make it on this morning, or did he fall asleep? No, okay. No Corey this morning. That's okay. He'll get the recording. I'm going to whiz through what's in Chapter 7, because there isn't a lot of it. And then I will work on answering any questions you guys have on the previous 7 modules. That means if you don't have any questions, this is going to be a very short lecture. Now, we are at the point of... we're about halfway through. A bit over halfway through, although the subnetting will take longer than a lot of the other things, so we're going to have to put extra time into the subnetting. A lot of you should be ready to sit your Chapter 6 exam. Don't panic if you're not. You do work at your own speed, but there are some people who are up to Chapter 6. And we're looking at the Chapter 7 exam. And then there is a 6-7 combo to test all of the knowledge you've gotten from Module 6 and Module 7, which is all about Ethernet fundamentals and Ethernet funky bits. Now, there's more to know about Ethernet than what is in the Cisco notes. In fact, I've got a whole book on Ethernet, which unfortunately I can't give you because it's O'Reilly and copyright. But it's actually quite a complex topic. Now, and I'll also try and go through the sorts of things that you will need to know to get through the 6 and the 7 test and the 6-7 final. And can anybody tell me what layer 4 of the OSI reference model is?
Session?
No, Chris, you're wrong, sorry.
What layer was it, Kerry?
Transport.
4. Did you know that, or did you look up the picture?
Oh, I know that. I was just counting from the wrong end, that's all.
No, I was just checking, because I wouldn't put it past anybody who's got a bit of vision to quickly Google up a picture of the OSI reference model and count down four layers. That's pretty standard behaviour.
The one that really helped me is all people seem to need data processing.
Ah, although most people, that's from layer 7 back to layer 1, which if that works for you, that's fine. You can certainly use that one. We use the please do not throw sausage pizza away. But if you're into all people seem to need data processing, both of those acronyms will work equally as well. And the reason I harp on the sausage pizza one is because it's actually on a CCNA study video thing, MP3, that's up on my server. And that's the one the Cisco people use. So obviously somebody at Cisco likes sausage pizza. All right, now, has anybody got any questions or anything while I just fiddle with Ventrilo and put it into AutoVox mode so I can scroll on the Braille display before we get started? Okie dokies, here we are. We now have happy stuff happening. All right. Now I'm just going to change that... delay time. Well, won't be a second. Okie dokies, that should be significantly better. It is. All right. Now, we're going to talk about a number of different Ethernet standards. And one of the things they want you to know about is... Oh, this is not what I wanted at all.
We'll just wait while Kerry scrolls down.
Thank you, Geraldine.
I'll just open these notes in Notepad because I've managed to turn on one of my clip libraries by accident.
We are waiting. We are waiting now for Kerry.
Oh, thank you, Geraldine. So, doesn't hurt that... Okay. Can we wait quietly? I know.
Quietly. Oh, so quietly.
I can't actually hear what I'm doing, but it's all right. Okay.
Loud noises!
Okie dokie. Maximize that. Alrighty. CCNA1 Notes Module 7. Okay, we're going to talk about various Ethernet standards. The first ones we're going to talk about... Don't do this to me. Come on. We're going to be... This module talks about types of Ethernet. That's what my first line of notes says. 10Base5, 10Base2, and 10Base T. You need to know about these because...
And just a heads up, you'll be covering them next week in ITE. Oh, not next week, sorry. After the holidays.
Yes, in fact, there are 2 weeks' holidays. Everybody remembers that there are 2 weeks' holidays. We will be available during lecture time, possibly on Ventrilo if there's enough of you interested, or on Skype if there's only one or two of you to answer the myriad of questions that you will all, of course, have for us. Now, I can assure you, actually we'll cover that after the lecture, but yes, 10Base5, 10Base2 and 10Base T are legacy Ethernet standards. That means they're old and crusty. They're the original ones. It's a bit difficult to get 10Base2 gear these days. I think I threw out all the cards that did 10Base2. It's a bit difficult to get 10Base5 gear. It's even harder to get 10Base5 gear. And you can get 10Base T gear, but you'd be lucky whether it would still work or not. Can anybody tell me what sort of cable 10Base 2 is? Does anybody know?
Coax.
Unshielded twisted pair.
No, coax is correct. Can you be any more specific than that?
Coax.
50 ohm coax, same junk we used to use for CBs actually.
It certainly is. And I think it's RG58, if my memory serves correctly.
RG58, and that's the thinner stuff, and the RG58U is the thicker stuff.
That's the stuff, 50-ohm coax. And it's important that you use 50-ohm coax on 10Base2 because the terminators are 50-ohm. There is actually a Ethernet standard, well, it's not an Ethernet standard, there's a standard called ARCnet, which we don't cover, which uses RG62, which I think is 82 ohms impedance or something weird. Now, it's important that if you are going to build networks with 10Base2, and I'd really suggest that you didn't, but if you really must insist, me and me mate only had two 10Base2 network cards and need to play Warcraft under DOS, that you perhaps get yourself some networking coax or RF coax, not TV coax. It will not work well over long distances. TV coax is RG59 and is 75 ohms and does not work well on 10Base2 networks. And the reason that is because there is an impedance mismatch and you get signal reflections. Ian's reflecting over there in the corner with that mirror finish Mac screen of his. Now, okay, the four common features of legacy Ethernet. I copied and pasted this out of the notes. I thought it was so good, actually. The timing parameters, the frame format, the transmission processes, and the basic design rule. So watch that basic design rule. 10 megabit and slower Ethernet are asynchronous. That looks really weird on a Braille display. Asynchronous means that you have 64 bits of synchronization information, which is actually 7 bytes of 01010101. That's enough of those, yep. And then the last byte of 01010111. So that's how you sync up the... Actually, I'm sure it was 01 or 10. You'd have to look that up, so I could be a bit out to the left or the right. But if you are looking that up, you've got far too much free time. And it synchronizes the transceivers so that they are ready to receive the packet. This is on 10 megabit Ethernet and slower. Keep in mind that 10 megabit Ethernet generally ran on 10Base2 or 10Base5. These are coaxial cables. One single loop of run cable in. Can anybody tell me which topology they would be run in, physically speaking? No. I've got a local answer of star, which is wrong. Yes, and an enable is correct with bus. We have a coaxial cable that runs along. And we have BNC connectors on the cable, and between the BNC connectors on each cable we have a T-piece, and if you were sitting here in the classroom we'd be able to show you a T-piece, except I don't have any on me. There's a whole stack at home though. And then the base of the T-piece, if you're familiar with what a print T looks like, it has a vertical line and then a crossbar across the top, and the vertical line, so to speak, has got a BNC connection that plugs into the network card of your computer. And on the ends of the network you have 250.
We could free up some of those Tupperware containers.
They're not in the Tupperware containers, they're in the Bunnings containers.
I think I've got a little fishing box full of them.
Yeah, and unfortunately if we free those up and bring them in here though, Gemma, they need to get lost.
What, the Tupperware?
No, the tea pieces. Yeah, but we'd have to bring them in one by one or that'll disappear into a black hole, so we'll see how we go. Yeah, we got a whole stack of them off deck Ethernet cards. You used to get, when you bought an Ethernet card, I don't know whether anybody realises this, but Ethernet cards used to be horrendously expensive. They used to be like $500. And in fact, the really good ones were like $1,500. So putting your computer on the Ethernet was somewhat expensive. And, I mean, people have the hide to complain these days about paying $49.95 at Dick Smith's. I mean, that is still pretty expensive. But the price of networking equipment has come down quite significantly, as my house, which is full of cables, can attest to. Okay, back into that window. No, that window. Okay. No. They use 8 octets of timing information. That's a funky way of saying 8 bytes. There are 7 bytes of... Yeah, I've already been through all that. And the synchronization happens with that byte. A bit time is 100 nanoseconds. This is also referred to as the slot time. It's the shortest time in Ethernet terms that is valid. Any timing stuff is done as multiples of the slot time. And it is the time taken, theoretically, for a signal to go from one end of the Ethernet segment to the other, and that may or may not include repeaters, and I'll talk about that rule in a minute, and for a collision to occur and the fragments of the collision to be able to return to the sending station. Because electricity travels along copper wire slower than the speed of light, and it takes time for a signal to travel 185 meters. On speeds of speeds of 1,000 megabits and slower, things are limited to the slot time, which is basically what I just said. Okay. And it's 100 nanoseconds on 10 megabit Ethernet. It's 10 nanoseconds on 100 megabit Ethernet. And I think it's 1 nanosecond on gigabit. But we'll get down to that. So as the speed of the Ethernet multiplies by 10, the slot time is divided by 10. Okay, on 10 base... 2 and 10 base 5, you've got the SQE, which is a signal quality error signal. It basically is, I don't think it's in your test, at least I hope it's not. It was a signal designed as a heartbeat signal to ensure that the transceiver was functional. When you are running 10 base 5 Ethernet, you actually connect, generally speaking, the transceiver into AUI connector, which I think is an attachment unit interface, and you actually plug the transceiver onto the back of the network card. And with 10 base 5, they actually had these vampire tap things that would actually screw into the cable, which was all a bit interesting. And you actually had external transceivers, and the only way that you could make sure that the transceiver was actually functional was to actually have this signal quality error thing happening. It is used, can be used in full duplex, although usually you don't. It occurs within 4 to 8 microseconds after a frame to ensure that the transfer actually succeeded. Whenever there is a collision on the medium, whenever there is an improper signal on the media, such as a jabber or a cable short, and we'll talk about those, whenever a transmission has been interrupted. Okay. Can anybody tell me what a collision is?
Clash between two packets?
It is a collision is where you have two signals travelling on the medium at the same time. Either two transmissions, two stations trying to transmit at the same time. They used to have all this really weird stuff about late collisions and stuff, but it doesn't seem to be in the 3.1 very much anymore, unless it's in Chapter 8. But yeah, basically it's when you see a voltage that is twice what it should be, or you see a signal that is too high, it is a collision. Now, it's important to realise that collisions are a normal part of half-duplex Ethernet. They are part of the standard. They are going to happen. You don't avoid the collisions. You can find ways of minimising them, but you don't avoid the collisions occurring. And in the old days, if you had a 10 megabit hub, because we didn't have lots of switches, they were very expensive, and you had this coax cable plugged into them, coax cable plugged in on the uplink port. If the light was blinking like a Christmas light, you would be fairly happy, but if the light was steadily on, the collision light, it was time to start looking at upgrading your network or to look for a faulty network card or a faulty station. Okay, as previously discussed, 10Base2 is a linear bus. One break in the cable and it's all over Yellow Rover. You're looking at no traffic travelling on that cable. And this was quite useful in TAFE, especially in L1.9 in Tamworth. The terminator was on the back of the deck server, which was right in the corner, and if you didn't want to do anything on the network that lecture, a student would sneak up behind the server and remove the terminator. And that would certainly bring the network down. Which brings up an interesting point. Can anybody tell me what the problem with that scenario is, apart from the fact that no work gets done?
One little piece, goodbye whole network?
Well, that's partly it, but what's the bigger problem with the way that the classroom had been set up?
It's probably a little bit like the way we set a training room up about 10 years ago. We had that running through two training rooms, and someone would unplug a computer and not unplug the T-piece properly, and then we'd just take the coax off one side of it, and goodbye whole training centre.
The other thing also is that your servers don't have very good physical security if people can walk up behind them and pull the terminators off them.
We actually had the server in the back office, but yes.
Alrighty. Okay. Now, when Ethernet places signals on the wire, and we have a buzzer lab for this, but the buzzer I don't think is here today, so we'll have to do that after the holidays. They don't actually just put, 1 volt for a 1 and 0 volts for a 0. Can anybody tell me why they possibly don't have 1 volt for a 1 and 0 volts for a 0?
Too difficult to measure with the fluctuations of the electricity.
That's one of the reasons. And what's one of the other simple reasons that you wouldn't have 0 volts for a 0?
I guess if the sending signal was faulty or if there was a break in the cable, it'd all be 0.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't be able to really easily pick the difference between 1s and 0s, because if the cable was quiet at 0 volts, you're teaming that everybody was constantly sending 0s, which obviously wouldn't be very cool. So they have come up with various encoding schemes that they use for this sort of stuff, and we cover the Manchester encoding scheme in the lab. Basically what happens is, rather than actually looking at the voltage level to detect what signal you've got, the Manchester encoding actually looks to see whether there is a change in the voltage window, in the voltage within the centre of the time window. That is to say that if there are three voltages. Are there three voltages in Manchester? Yeah? And you actually look for a change. He'll think there is a switch, there is a transition change on every bit, either from low to high, or low to higher, or higher to lower, or there has to be a transition for you to see that there is a bit there. And there is sort of a buzzer lab that we look at for that, but it doesn't really come up in your test, but you sort of have to understand that that's basically how it works. It actually looks for the transitions in the signal, not the actual presence or absence of a signal. Okay, we have timing limits on Ethernet for the following things. For cable length and propagation delay. Propagation delay, that's just a funky way of saying how long it takes the signal to get from one end of the cable to the other. The delay of repeaters, and we'll talk about repeaters in a minute. Okay, there's my little joke for the day. Delay of transceivers, interframe gap shrinkage, which never comes up again in the end of the the notes, but essentially it's frames getting closer together. And delays within the station. In other words, if you've got a slow computer or your network card's having a bit of trouble, it can actually take time for things to happen. Does anybody know off the top of their head, and I don't expect anybody would, what's the approximate round-trip time of a ping on 10 megabit Ethernet? Does anybody remember?
Less than 10 milliseconds.
Yeah, it's actually about 3 or 4 milliseconds. Actually, it swings between 3 and 4. Okay, we have the 5-4-3 rule. Okay, or the 3-4-5 rule, if you want to turn around the other way. This is a rule that says you can have a maximum of 5 segments, 4 repeaters, and 3 populated segments containing workstations. If you have more than this, bad things, TM, happen. You end up exceeding links. Now, can anybody tell me what layer of the OSI reference model a repeater works at?
Layer 2?
No. The physical layer. Yes, it works at the physical layer. Okay, now I'm going to say this about 10 times this lesson, but you really need to know which levels of the OSI reference model all of these devices work, because it is in the tests all the way through. They really flog you around the head with this in CCNA1. And then CCNA2, they expect you to know it. So they don't. And then they come up with some nifty question and go, well, you all know about the OSI reference model, so here we go. Okay, this is a quick timeline. 10 base 5, first Ethernet standard, 1980 it roughly came out, and 500 meters maximum cable length. Okay, the cable is sensitive to reflections, in other words, signal reflections, and the equipment's a bit hard to find. The bus is a single point of failure, and you can only have half duplex on 10 base 5. 10 base 2 introduced in 1985. What was I doing in 1985? I was in U4. Okay. Smaller, lighter, easier to install cable. Legacy Ethernet. Up to 30 stations on a segment up to 185 meters long. Up to 30 stations on a segment up to 185 meters long. Up to 30 stations on the segment up to 185 meters long. That is in your test. Okay. 10 base T, introduced in 1990. The max length is 90 meters, although the actual max length is 100 meters, but they allow 10 meters for drop leads from the patch panel on the wall to the workstation. Okay, category 3 has 4 pairs, and 2 of them are used for Ethernet at 10 megabits per second. Can anybody tell me which of the 4 pins, other than Chris and Gemma, who know, because I've made Gemma try crimson cables and Chris's crimson cables, can anybody tell me what pins are used for Ethernet on the Category 3 connector?
3 and 4?
I'll give you a correct on 3. I want the actual pin numbers, like from... Yep.
Yep.
Okay, well, the answer we're up to are 1 and 2 and 3 and 6 are the 4 pins that are used for 10 and 100 megabit Ethernet. 1, 2, 3 and 6. And if you're wiring a straight through cable, 1 and 2 connect to 3 and 6. And 3 and 6 connect to 1 and... No, that's not. That's all right. You cross the pairs. If you're running a crossover cable... Yeah, 1 and 2 go to 3 and 6, and 3 and 6 go to 1 and 2. You are connecting the transmit pair on one device to the receive pair on the other device, and we went through that a bit in Chapter 6, and I'd say in Chapter 6 to 8, switching basics, we'll be going through that quite significantly. Can anybody tell me one of the things that crossover cables are good for, or used to be good for?
Cross the pairs.
connecting two computers together without having to use the switch.
Yes, if you're on budget networking and you're just eating noodles for dinner, and you still want to play network games, you and your friend can have a crossover cable and you can connect two computers together. Can anybody tell me what the problem with that, however, is? What's the limitation of doing that?
That is all, two computers.
That's right. So if your other mate turns up to the network party and you don't have a hub or a switch and you're using 10BASE-T, he's not going to get onto the network games.
And then when you do get the hub or switch, you can't reuse that cable.
Well, you never used to be able to reuse that cable, although most switches... Yeah, a lot of switches are auto-sensing. In other words, they use MII... negotiation to figure out what speed they're going to run at, and they also have auto MDI/MDIX, which is something that's written on the box, and in funky speak that means it can actually figure out which way the pairs are around, and if you're using crossover cables or straight through, it will automatically flip the pairs around to make sure that they're around the right way. Can anybody tell me how you differentiate between a normal cable and a crossover cable? If there were two on the bench, how would you figure out which was which?
Well, some people used to tell me colours, but I'm not even sure if that's correct these days. Like the colours of the outside cable, which really wouldn't matter anyway if somebody crimped the plug around the wrong way.
The best way to tell is to actually look at the ends if you can and actually check the pinout, which is a pain. So either label the cables with a little cable tag that says crossover or standardize on a color standard in your organization, which of course somebody will go ahead and break, but you can't have everything.
What I do in my network environment is when I buy a new cable, I ask my sighted counterpart, being my wife, to say, what letter is on this cable? So I can remember myself as I then go about labeling my cables.
Yes, that certainly does work. And generally speaking, though, these days, unless you were wiring two routers together or two switches together, you wouldn't generally buy too many crossover cables because... I'll get back to that in a second. When you run crossover, you wouldn't use many crossover cables unless you're hooking routers to routers, switches to switches, or PCs to PCs. If you're connecting the same sort of device together, you would tend to use a crossover cable, but we do cover all the different rules as to what you use to connect different devices together. For example, if you're connecting a PC to a router, you have to use a crossover cable because, generally speaking, PCs are connected to switches and routers are connected to switches, and it's a switch that does the crossover stuff. And the older Cisco gear, which is what all of us impoverished heavy people will be, well, we've got the new stuff, but if you're using the old 2500 series stuff because you've got it cheap off eBay, you have to be careful of this because it will not automatically switch the pairs, and you do need the right sorts of cables. Also notice that many 2500 series routers, especially the cheap ones, only have AUI connectors for Ethernet or BNC, so you need a transceiver or two to actually connect the Ethernet interfaces on routers together. Now, the question about using crossover cable for peer-to-peer, if you only had two computers, you could set up a two-computer peer-to-peer network. And in fact, there was a time back in 95, 96, well, probably sort of 98, 99, that you could buy a kit called the My First Network Kit, and it had two network cards, a crossover cable, and a copy of some network software, and that was so you could set up your first network with everything you'd ever need, except for the fact that the crossover cable wouldn't work on any other hub or switch you wanted to use, see previous discussion. Okie dokies. Full duplex is possible on twisted pair because you have a send and a receive pair. New installations should use Cat5e cable or better. I'd almost go as far as saying if you're going to be doing a new building in 2007, you'd probably better use Cat 6 unless you really have a reason not to. Cat 6 is good for gigabit, and it's certainly better quality cable, and we'll talk about the differences between the categories a little bit further down. Okay, the transmit pair of one device is connected to the receive pair of the other device. I think we've covered that. Now, note with 10 base T and 100 base T and 1000 base T, all stations connect to a switch or a hub. Can anybody tell me the name of that topology if there's just one hub or switch there?
Star.
Yes, we have a star. Although technically if they all connect to a hub, you've actually got a physical star and a logical bus, just to confuse you all, if you connect them all to a hub, because the hub just is a multi-port repeater.
Shall we sing Baby I'm a Star?
You don't have to be a star, baby.
Is Ethernet used in wireless network? The standards for Ethernet are used, the frame formats are used, and although there are different frame formats for wireless because there's extra information and stuff in the frames, so Ethernet frames are encapsulated into 802.11 frames, and they can actually be bigger than Ethernet frames. Often you do use Ethernet in wireless networks. Because how else are you going to connect your access points up to the rest of your cabled network? You can have a purely wireless network, but often if most of your infrastructure is cabled, there's no point connecting all of this wireless stuff up if you can't actually plug it into the infrastructure you've already got. Okay, hubs do not... Go ahead, you're right.
I'm sorry, Kerry. I was just going to say, in addition to that, if you're trying to do any repairs to your router interface, you're going to want to have a cable to go in to change that, because if you try and do that wirelessly, all of a sudden, if you're doing a DHCP recollection from older talks, you will no longer be able to go back inside and change anything. The router will lock you out once you flash it.
And in fact, a lot of manuals for wireless network, wireless routers very specifically say that the flash should be uploaded to the router over a cabled in connection. And if you lose power during the upgrade, and this is certainly a problem for India and probably Egypt as well, you'll brick your router. So, I don't know. Save up for an UPS or something. You don't want the power going out when you're flashing your router. That will tend to brick them. When I say brick them, they don't work anymore. It's the technical term for not working anymore. The other thing that can brick your router, and I'm not going to name any names, is if you don't exactly follow the manufacturer's flash instructions and you put the flash portions into a router in the wrong order, and the router doesn't work after that. No. There are multiple standards of Ethernet. It's 10 base 2 and 10 base 5 that are limited to 10 megabits per second. Ethernet can actually go up to 10 gigabits per second. In fact, they now have a standard for 10 gigabit copper, but it's only over very short distances. Now, it's not a good idea to link hubs together unless you know what you're doing, because hubs are multi-port repeaters, and if you link too many together, you can exceed delay parameters. What I can honestly tell you, though, is good luck buying a hub in 2007. You can get them for very specialized uses, but they're not common. Most things, even the $25 cheap and dodgy D-Link, will tend to be a switch. I just had remembrances of why I'm so fond about D-Link. I actually had the power supplies on two D-Link switches just go bang for no reason, and all the smoke came pouring out of them. And even when I replaced the power supplies, that was the end of the switches that had been attached to them. So that wasn't very cool. And to give you some idea as how the prices of switches and things have come down, my first set of 10-100 switches, which I bought in May of 1999, and I was very excited about going 100 megabit because we'd only had 10 megabit up until then, so I was a starving student. The switches were on special for $143 each for a 5-port switch, 10-100, and that was a bargain. Unfortunately, it was a D-Link bargain. After that, we found the prices fell quite significantly. You can pick up a switch for $20-$30 if you go to a computer swaps meet. Okay, the maximum distance from a hub, and this will be in your test, the maximum distance from the hub is 100 metres or 328 feet. 100 metres or 328 feet. Yep. Okay, so those maximum distances, and I really encourage you guys to look through these notes. Don't just take my word for it in the lecture. Do read through the notes of Chapter 7 and make a note of some of the distances and things, and commit the ones for things like 10 base T and stuff to memory, because you will need to know them.
Wow.
Okay, for 100 base networks, we have 100 base T and 100 base FX, is it? FX, yes, for multimode fiber. Okay, all of the timing, transmission, and frame format and transmission method are the same for 100 base T. Slot time is 10s or 0.01 microseconds, so 10ns is 10 nanoseconds or 10 billionths of a second. Okay, 4B, 5B encoding is used, and they talk about all those different encodings, and they don't explain them because they really do get too complicated unless you're doing datacoms theory. And 100 base T was ratified in 1995. There was actually a fight between 100 base T and VG Anyland for a while, and VG Anyland lost. They ratified the other one. Okay, so that was 1995 for that. Full duplex was introduced in 1997. Anybody tell me what full duplex is? Yep, we have a local answer that's correct. How about a remote one that's correct? More information? That is exactly right. Okay, so Attila gets the lollipop. See, he's after these lollipops, I can tell you. Most switches are full duplex. They just are. It makes sense for them to be. It's how they work, and we'll talk about that in Chapter 8. Okay, 100 megabit fiber. It's good for high noise environments, but it was a bit tricky to run and stuff. It wasn't really that popular, especially now we've got gigabit copper. And it uses an encoding called NRZI, which is non-return to zero, and it's a special encoding used if you're using light signals, and that's about all you need to know about it. Okay, I don't think this is important in the test, but class 1 repeaters can introduce up to 140 bit times worth of delay because they change the media type, and class 2 repeaters may introduce up to 92 bit times worth of delay. But I don't ever remember getting asked a question on that. Okay, gigabit Ethernet, 1,000 megabits per second, 802.1 AB. Okay, 802.3 AB. You don't need to know the name of that standard. I don't think it's written on all the switch boxes if you forget anyway. Although, if you can't read switch boxes, that may pose a problem to you. Okay, fiber is 802.3Z. Okay, in gigabit Ethernet, the bit timing is 1 nanosecond. Well, there you go. Makes a bit of sense, doesn't it? If you're going to transmit 1 billion bits a second, you better transmit 1 bit a second. Well, that's the bit time, but it's all devilishly more complicated than that, as you'll find out in just a minute. Okay, bits converted to symbols and data, which means you've sort of got these start frame, idle frame, stop, and all sorts of stuff intermixed with the data stream. And it's more efficient to do it that way because you can actually jam more signals over the wire in less time and less bandwidth. Okay, copper uses all four pairs. You can get them at 125 megabit per pair, although at full duplex you get your, if you run them in both directions at the same time, you get your 250 megabits per second, multiplied by 4 gives you a gigabit. You get complex circuits, this means higher price, although this is changing, but they're still a little bit more expensive than 100 megabit stuff. When the cables are idle, there are 9 voltage patterns on the cable, and when they're busy, there's 17. When I was 17. Anyway, but seriously, that is devilishly complicated, and you don't want to know how it works unless you're designing these things, because they really had to pull every trick out of the hat to make gigabit go over copper, and then they had to go and get a bigger hat and pull some more tricks out of it to get 10 gigabit copper, which they managed, but it's pretty funky stuff. Okay, 1000 base SX and LX are single and multi-mode fiber. I remember them as LX being multi-mode fiber because multi's got an L in it, but there you go. Don't think that's in the test though. You can use short and long wavelength or lasers for different application. The maximum distance is 5 kilometres. Okay, 10 gigabit fiber works at distances up to 40 kilometres. It's a viable metropolitan area network technology. So, handy stuff, and it's fairly thin and stuff, and you can run it through streets and things, and it's fairly innocuous. And the bit time for 10 gigabit fiber is 0.1 of a nanosecond. Okay, that's all the notes I have. Does anybody have any questions?
Is token ring Ethernet?
No, it's a completely different standard. It's done by IBM originally, and it is not Ethernet at all. It's a completely different methodology. And Ian does a Thursday chat on token ring in Thursday chats from last year.
Are we covering any token ring stuff in CCNA1 at all?
No, we're not. It's only used... Yeah, but was it in the test?
Was.
The only thing you want to know about token ring is that it's a that it is wired in a ring and that it's connected as a logical ring and a physical star, and that the speeds are 4 and 16 megabits per second. We don't do a lot on token ring. No, generally not. They're my lecture notes. It's all in the notes. Like, my lecture notes are taken from your curriculum notes. That's exactly where I get my lecture material from. So generally speaking, I don't send out the lecture notes. And they're not complete. You don't want my lecture notes. Mine aren't very complete. They're very concise. One of the lines, for example, was talk about 10 megabit Ethernet. Okay, any other questions? Or any other things that people want to raise before we... the modules 1 through 6, or 1 through 5, are up for the next week. Modules 6, 7, and 6 and 7 are up until Saturday, and they will be put up again after Saturday so that people can do the exams over the holidays.
Sounds good. You might have an IT day and a CCNA day.
Yeah, well, we'll be in at the regular lecture times, and we will be available for answering questions and sorting things out and stuff. Do let us know.
That would be handy, actually, because I'm not going to tell my clients that I've got school holidays. They can still think I'm at school, and I might use that time. So if you're about, I might talk to you if I need to. Thanks.
Yep, no problem. Okay, anybody got anything general they want covered before we all sign off Ventrilo for now?
Well, everyone have a good break, and I'll catch you later then. Bye.
You too, Attilo.
3 weeks, everybody. 2 weeks. Oh, well, the third week. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because it's two weeks off. Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and the same on the Wednesdays. 2 Wednesdays off, Wednesday back on. But we will be around, so you can catch